This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
This week's episode of Meat in 3 is inspired by the reemergence of Cicada Brood 10. We're talking all about insects.
Some people are calling crickets the gateway bug because that's a great introduction to what edible insects is all about.
So we found detectable levels of cesium-137 in 68 of 122 total honey samples that we had.
What is that?
Is it tarantula?
No, what is it?
It's a tarantula.
Oh, and they're going to eat it? No.
Listen to Meat in 3 wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to the Grape Nation, your weekly wine journey. Our guest is Sarah Perez. We'll talk to Sarah about Priorat, Mas Martinet, and more. We'll taste some of Sarah's wines for our weekly wine sip. I'm your host, Sam Ben Ruby. Stay with us for the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We bring wine to the people. You can't talk about wines from the Priorat region of Spain without recognizing the impact the Perez family has made in the last four decades. Sarah Perez is the winemaker and owner, along with her family, of Mas Martinet, one of the five founding wineries in the Priorat. Sarah farms organically, is a magician with the Garnacha and Carignan grape, and produces some of the most sought-after and interesting wines in the world. Sarah also makes Vinos La Universal with her husband, Rene. Welcome to the Grape Nation, Sarah.
Hello. And thank you.
June is Women and Wine Month on the Grape Nation. Every June for the past 4 years, we feature only women, although during the course of the year, we prominently feature women. So you are the first in our June series of Women and Wine. So Wow. Thank you for coming on.
And thank you for inviting me.
It's a pleasure to have you. Now, where are you right now?
Well, I'm right now in Priorat at Mas Martinet.
Okay, you're at the winery.
Yes.
All right, so let's get right into it. So you've been around Mas Martinet pretty much since you were a kid. You know, now you play a crucial role in the winery. What I want you to do is I want you to give us a little background on your journey in life and wine that got you to running the winery and making the wine. And feel free to, you know, weave in the history of the family and the winery too, you know, because of Priorat and your dad and the other winemakers. But, you know, I want you to do that in the context of, you know, how you got there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I arrived with my parents and brothers and sister here into Priorat in 1981. Because we lived near Barcelona, so approached to Barcelona, and my parents want to move to a little village, and we moved to Priorat. In that moment, in the 80s, at the early 80s, that was like bottom of the world. And really? Coming from Barcelona, I was just 9 years old, and I was like getting crazy when I arrived here. And it was like, I was moving through 50 years in a back. And it was very, very shocking me. And my parents were looking that the life here was around agriculture and absolutely viticulture, but there were no schools or winemaking or something like that. So they built the first enology and viticulture school in Spain, here in Falset, in Priorat. And From that moment, I was there. I was just 9, 10, 11 years old. But we need to build up a cellar, planting vineyard. And I was here with my brothers and sister. And I was the oldest. So I need to be here with my parents, just planting, moving stones, building up the cellar. And that was very hard at the moment because I was very little. I was a child.
Right.
But from now on, it's like, wow, I was very lucky, you know?
Yeah.
So in that moment, René Barbier's father was arriving to Priorat. He wanted to make something special with the wines in Priorat. And then he invites Alvaro, Daphne, and other people. And he invites my father because he was the teacher in the Enology and Viticulture School. So,
Alvaro Palacios, right?
Yes.
And Daphne
Gorian, right, from Claude Erasmus. Yeah.
Right. And your dad. Okay.
And
my dad
and René Barbier from Claude Magloire.
Right.
So they have started a nice project to rebuild Priorat and the great wines in Spain. And we were there, you know. I was just 15, 17 years old, and I was there just building up all of that with them. But since that childhood looking, you know, and but everything was like a show. And they were starting a very passionate and non-profit project, a very crazy project from nothing, just from the stones from Priorat. And that was my school. And I think that that was marking me in all my entire life. And
did you want to get out of there, or you finally realized
I'm
going to be? You always like, what am I doing in the country?
I can remember Alvaro putting on my nose the first Clos Martinet or Clos de Fee or Clos Mogador 89. And he said, smell it. It's like chocolate. It's like licorice. It's like, and I was just thinking, oh my God, it's just wine and I hate it. And I was not prepared. But I went to Barcelona for a studying biologist, and I was in love with ecology, with animals, with plants and all of that. And during my 5 years studying the biologist career, I was just thinking, oh my God, there is wine on my veins. And finally, when I finished my studies, I combined biology with philosophy, trying to understand the world. That was very difficult for me. And
right.
And finally, in 1996, I decided to leave Barcelona and come back home to Priorat and say to my father, hey, you are working as wine consultant everywhere in Spain. I want to stay at home and I want to restart the Mas Martinet story. So I did it. And my father, that is a great, great, great person, permitted me and right. take confidence with me. And I have started in 1996 in Mas Martinet, just trying to make a great revolution in wine.
Now go back a little when the five families know had that vision to make wine. Wasn't it initially like a co-op situation?
Yeah.
You know, everybody made the wines and just slapped their own labels on it?
Yeah, the first vintage 89 was the same wine and just different labels for different markets. But I can't remember 1990 vintage. And Alvaro says, oh, I want a little bit more Barrique. Daphne says, oh, I want just more Grenache. René says, oh, I want just more. So in 1990, there are some differences between the wines. 1991, it was more difference. And then in 1992, we separate each other because each one needs their own, to follow their own way.
So Sarah, when everybody broke off on their own, each wine had a uniquely different characteristic, which is what made everyone's wine so beautiful and different, right?
Yes.
So the Barbier family is very important to Priorat and very important to your family. I mean, they were the motivating force in everyone getting together and making wines. But you grew up around all these people, and you grew up with, is it Rene the third, the second?
The fourth.
The fourth, right.
Yes.
So all, you were literally all together, but explain, you know, besides the Barbiers being, you know, like you guys are founding family, tell me what eventually happened with you and Rene so that it sets up for later on when we talk about other things.
Well, in 1989, we made the harvest together, and it was very impressive to me when I met him, but then I forget him. That's it.
Okay.
But in 1998, so almost 10 years after, we went to California to discover some wineries, and we went with some viticulturers here in Priorat. And in that moment, November 98, we discovered each other because from the among of all the group, we love the same wines. We make the same questions and we question the same subjects. So,
how old were you guys?
In that moment, yeah. 27 or something like that, or 26, yeah.
Okay. So that's when everything started.
Yes, all right. That's in California, yeah.
Right. So we'll get into, you know, how that relationship really blossomed.
Well, we have been, well, in touch. And then in 2001, we wanted to go to make the harvest together in Argentina. So we went, the two of us, together.
Really?
And there we really discover each other. That's it.
Did you work on...
Achával Ferrer.
Where?
Achával Ferrer.
Uh-huh.
It was a very nice cellar that they have started in 1999, and we went in 2001.
Right. So that's interesting.
Yeah.
All right. I want to get into something that is hard not to talk about and how it affected you. It's really been, you know, life during the pandemic, you know, how it had affected your family, the winery, and hopefully if you're starting to see a post-pandemic world. So going backwards, you know, what effects did the pandemic have, you know, on Mas Martinet? You know, hopefully no one got sick. How did it affect business, workers?
Well, we are living in Priorat. This is a very little region with very few people. So we are making, we are working our own vineyards. We are making wine with our team of 18 people. And on March 2020, it was like a shock. You know, we need to go to the vineyards every day for working. And during 15 days, we didn't know if we could follow all the works in all the jobs in vineyard, because here in Spain, they say you cannot go and work outside. So it was very difficult at that moment. In that moment, 2020, normally here in Priorat, we receive around 300, 400 liters of rain. In 2020, we received 900. It was,
oh my God,
crazy. It was very nice at the beginning because
right.
From the south, we are always thirsty. And in that moment was like, wow, this is like an angel. This is a present. But well, then the mildew was coming and everything was very difficult day by day. And we have been losing our crop day by day. So we had two real problems. The first, the economic, because we couldn't sell the wine.
Right.
And second, the crop. We lose 86% of our yield. So during the first 3 months of the pandemic, we were very scared about economic terms in selling. But from the fourth month, we understood that the worst monster was to lose our crop. And we have it, everything, you know. So we make a big reunion with all the team and we said, well, we need to keep all the different families that are working here at Mas Martinet. We will do the impossible and we will take care about our vineyards, about our people and about everything. And we were working so hard. And finally, we have learned that life is that a lot of big rocks in your way and that we need to climb it. We cannot stop. We need to take confidence. We need to respect. We need to love. And I think that the most important thing that we have learned is that we need to take confidence with our emotional learning, because the economic or the other things are really not important. So
Good perspective.
We have been very close, all the team, and we could go out of all this pandemic situation. I don't know how it will be the next one or two or three next years.
Really?
But, well, I think we are prepared. We need to be flexible. We need to be very conscious. We need to reduce our non-important things, and we need to focus on taking care of our people and our land and our landscape. That's it.
It sounds like you've prioritized the important things.
Yeah.
In the United States, you know, in most areas, it seems like we're coming out of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know exactly what that means. You know, things are opening. Yeah. It's not like normal life.
No.
Is it like that there, or is it a little behind?
Mm. It's more or less the same. Now we are opening a little bit. So all the people is like, hey, the normal life is coming. But
some hope. You have to have some hope. And like you said, no stone in front of you should, you know, stay in the way.
Yeah, so, but it's like after a war, the post-war is worse sometimes at the same war. So I don't know. We need to be prepared. We need to pay attention. We need to pay, putting clear what is the real important thing. That's it.
Yep.
And go ahead. That's it.
Sounds right. I know a lot of people have enjoyed wines from the Priorat, but I also know, and you also know, that many more have not.
Yeah.
You know, so one of the reasons I wanted to have you on the show is, you know, the wines you make, but also, you know, how important Priorat is a winemaking region. I can't think of anybody better than you again to give us a quick lesson on the region. You know, when people think Priorat, here are the things that I, you know, want you to briefly go through. Location, you know, you're in Spain, but where? The climate, you just alluded, you know, you're in the south. There are soils there that have an incredible impact, you know, on the type of wines. And there's predominant grape varieties. Now, we'll get into those grapes more when we talk specifically about your wines, but the region is known, you know, for certain grapes. So, you know, quickly take me through all of that if you can.
Well, we are located 1 hour and a half south from Barcelona, so we are very close to Barcelona.
Right.
We are very close, 20 minutes to the sea, but we cannot see it because we are located in a not mountain area, because we have no mountains. We have little hills, but a lot of them. We have no plain areas. We have a very short perspective, because always you have a little hill, in front of your eyes. And our little landscape, plagued from little hills, it's with a very stony soil called Licorella. It's a slate. And our orography is very tragic because everything is steep slopes always. So the slate is dark gray and dark orange because of the oxidation of the iron, and it's very mineral. We are living in a south, thirsty, stony, dusty soil, and it's not easy, but there is a very magic and telluric energy from the soil that people that is arriving here know wants to leave it. There is something very special from centuries and centuries and centuries ago that is captivating you, your energy, your focusing, everything. There is a special peace from the south that is napping you. It's something strange that it's difficult to describe if you're not coming and walking right through our landscape. And our vines are going up in deep slopes of stony, dark gray stones and with a lot of hiddenness. And they are trying to survive, and they are giving up little grapes, majority of Grenache and Carignan. And we are.
So you're saying the berry is small?
Yeah.
It's very small. Concentrated and small?
Yeah. We have Camite Cerales that we are making 600 kilos per hectare. It's nothing. It's like, right. 100 grams per vine. It's very little. It's very hard working here, but at the same time, working here, it's giving you a peace and a crowing of soul, very, very special. And that mineral soil is translating into the wine. We can bottle a piece of our landscape to show to the world the taste of our soil, because there is licorice inside, there is iron, there is meat, there is blood, there is all that strange things that are moving you. It's a very unique personality, I think.
So what grapes, the area is known for grapes, but tell me about the grapes, indigenous or prominent in the area. Oh. And obviously they do well in that, very trying 200 soil years environment.
Ago, 200 years ago, we have been cultivating 15 grapevines in red and 15 grapevines in white. But after Phylloxera, we've reduced to red Grenache, red Carignan, and then a little bit of white Grenache, white Picpoul, red Picpoul, and a little bit others. But mainly red Grenache, right, and Carignan. And we focus on both grape varieties.
Right. That's a good segue, because you were gracious enough to send me wines, and I wanted to talk about a couple of wines on the air. We'll talk about the Clos Martinet towards the end of the show, but in front of me I have the Martinet Brew, yeah, the 2019, which is, mm-hmm, the current vintage. Quickly tell me about the wine. There's a grape blend in it, and anything else?
Well, for me, when I have started in Mass Martinet, I took the roots from my parents, and they have started Mass Martinet with all the group with an idea that was make a red wine revolution in Priorat, and they want to keep the red Grenache. They don't wanted the Carignan, and they wanted to plant Syrah and Cabernet and Merlot for to make beauty wines here in Priorat, because they were tasting the wines from the cooperative with Carignan and a little bit Grenache, and the wines were very rustic. So they changed during the 80s a lot the grape map of Priorat. And when
Adding in those grapes, by adding in Syrah and Cab Sauv,
yes,
right?
Yeah. So
was there any influence like from Tuscany, you know, where Sangiovese was predominant, yeah, and then with the Super Tuscans,
yeah,
they planted Merlot, and
they were looking to France always. So they took the Syrah and the Merlot and the Cabernet. But it's the same that in Tuscany was happening. So at the same time, more or less. So it was something more mundial, you know. That was a little revolution in different areas, you know. And Priorat was not outside from that, you know. But as I took as a second generation, I need to be connected with the generation of my grandparents or my grand-grandparents, not directly because they were not coming from here, but the generation of them. So I need to recuperate the old Carignan, and I need to recuperate the old Grenache and some white grapevines, trying to explain all the history of Priorat. And I make three different wines, like an homage to the people before me that was arriving Priorat before me. So for me, Martine Brew and Claus Martinet is my homage to my parents. And both of them are made with the five grapevines, Grenache, Carignan, Syrah, Merlot, and Cabernet, that the generation of my parents, they decide to plant.
So is Martinet Brew, I don't want to be wrong in saying this, but in a way, is it like a baby Clos Martinet?
At the beginning, was thinking in that way. When I took the reeds of Mas Martinet, I decided that Clos Martinet is one vineyard and Martinet Brew is another different one vineyard. So, but at the beginning was like the second wine, you know, because my parents and Alvaro and all of them had that Bordelaise idea about the first and the second wine, you know. But our generation took another way of looking the land. And for me, it was one vineyard is one wine. So I decided that Claus Martinet was one vineyard, the vineyard of our cellar, and another vineyard that we had, it was direct for Martine Brew that was younger. And for me, was that.
So let me ask you this. You know, you talk about, you know, you started making the wine, innovations and all that. You said somewhere that, you know, you were moving away from scientific winemaking to holistic natural precepts, which I think I know what it is, and I think it's right and important, but describe what that is, because I think that's how you're making your wine and your farming.
I have started to make wines in 90s. It was for me the most strongest technological area in winemaking, probably, in the history. And I have studied biology, and for me, science was my mother. And then I studied philosophy that was taking me to another way. But in the middle, I have studied at the university also knowledge in viticulture, and that was very, very, very technician. And when I come back at home, I have started to, from that vision, all the analytics, all the different orientations, the grapevines vinified from each parcel, vinified separately. Everything was quantified. Everything was, and I have arrived one moment in 2000 vintage that I was moved by some different wines that maybe they were not so well make it, but they were moving my soul, and I need to move my winemaking to something more holistic, more vibrant, more more different. I need to feel the wine and not just quantify the wine. And
isn't 2000 when you went organic?
Yeah. Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
This whole feeling brought you towards that direction, right?
Yeah. The first was to move to organic, then to agroecological, then to nature, moving from permaculture to biodynamic through a lot of ways that they are joining me in just one way of vision. And I think that I pass my 75% of my time in vineyard.
Right.
Walking, smelling, touching, working, and feeling what that vintage is giving to me. And then in cellar, we are staying very, very, very few. We never touch anything. We let the wine
express. Low intervention, you're saying.
Yes, but low intervention is a term that in different mouths have different significance.
Okay, so explain what you were getting into, what you were doing.
Well, it's agroecological in vineyard. That means half of permaculture, half of biodynamic, half of organic. Right. And then in cellar, I took the grapes. I don't stem, I crush with my feet all the grapes, and I enter into the tank to crush the grapes, and then I let it ferment, I let it move, I let it evolutionate. Then we taste when the fermentation is finished, I press and I decide where is the better place for its expression every vintage, and I let it develop itself. And for me, this is the low intervention. I'm deciding, yes, but I'm not putting anything. And I think that this is important.
And don't you use, once you move the wine to whatever vessel, don't you use different mediums, you know, whether it's wood or glass or clay,
yeah,
and different types of woods.
Yeah, I'm coming from fermenting in stainless tank and aging in new wood. That's it, from 90s. And then a lot of different of my wines were not happy in that process. So I started to use other materials and other capacities. So I'm moving from glass from 54 liters to a foudre from 4,000 liters, passing for clay amphora 200 or wow, 500, but glassed amphoras or, well, concrete tanks, concrete eggs, different things. It's true that every vineyard has two or three places where the wine is happy to be aged in.
Right.
Not all the materials or all the vessels are okay for all the wines or all the parcels or all the vintages. And the majority of the times, I don't use just one vessel during all the aging, because the wine is not happy always. So I'm tasting really when the wine is happy, is giving you something about happiness. The wine is expressing.
You know, it's alive, right?
Yeah, it's that. Yeah. And sometimes when you are tasting, you say, "Wow, this is not so happy. So we need to move." And we move it. If it needs more oxygen, more opening, or more close, or more, I don't know, tiny or more. So we are deciding every time where we put the wine. But it's the wine who is marking us where to go.
It dictates, right. Quick question. The other winemaking families in the Priorat, is everyone pretty much moving to organics or biodynamics, and, you know, their cellar practices are similar, or it varies?
Barbier?
Everybody, you know, whether,
everybody. Yes,
yeah, in the last, whether it's Erasmus, Mogador, I mean, are they, is everyone respecting?
A lot of, yes, a lot of people who prionat in the last 10 years is moving to organic and are moving to organic. And yes, there is a, I think in all the regions, there are, there is a like little revolution. Little because I my desire is that it can be bigger, you know, but it's okay. Something is moving and that's nice. And that's nice.
Right. Sarah, we have to take a quick break. We're talking to Sarah Perez. Sarah Perez is Mas Martinet in the Priot region. When we come back, we're going to talk about her wines, a project with her husband, and a few other things. You're listening to The Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network.
This episode is brought to you by Roberta's, home of Heritage Radio Network for 10 years. Roberta's was founded in Bushwick in 2008 and has become one of the most iconic restaurants in the country. HRN made its home inside of Roberta's in 2009, and together they have become part of the DIY fabric of the neighborhood. Roberta's, the pizza restaurant, is open for lunch and dinner 7 days a week and serves much more than just the famous wood-fired pizzas. Their team dreams up new salads, pastas, and sandwiches on the regular. Roberta's Tiki Bar is alive and well in the back garden, serving up frozen drinks in the summer and hot toddies in the winter. Stop by the bakery and takeout spot next door for fresh breads, sticky buns, and pizzas to go. And of course, there's the 2-Michelin-starred Blanca tucked away in the garden for truly daring diners. But Roberta's also extends beyond Bushwick, with multiple locations in New York City and now in Los Angeles. You can also find their frozen pies in grocery stores around the country. The spirit of Roberta's, like Heritage Radio Network, is everywhere. Here's to many more years of pizza-powered radio. Learn more about Roberta's at robertaspizza.com.
Okay, we're back. We're back with my guest, Sarah Perez from Mas Martinet. Sarah, let's talk about your wines a little. We talked a little about Klaus Martinet and Martinet Brew, you know, 5 grape varieties. You know, it's an homage to your parents and all of that. You mentioned Garnache and you mentioned Carignan. These involve your other wines. So there's Cami Pesserol, Els Escurcons. Let's, you know, talk to me about the wines. You
well,
know.
In 1995, I went up to the mountain because I wanted to discover the nest of an eagle that every year was coming to my home on March and was leaving on October. And we discovered at 600 meters that here is very high in Priorat, a very special soil from 400 millions above. And it was more than amazing. And old people from the town, when I moved the soil for planting, they say, wow, 200 years after, are you replanting in Els Escurcons? So there is a mythic place called Els Escurcons that I wanted absolutely recuperate from after the phylloxera. So I took old vines from Porrera, from Grenache, because in Els Escurcons, people from 200 years ago were planting just Grenache, and I planted red Grenache from Porrera there. And this is Els Escurcons. It's a very a real, ethereal, but Priorat Grenache that is moving my heart like anything in the world.
Really?
And for me, this is my homage to the people that was planting before the phylloxera, before 18th century. And then we are working a very nice old Carignan planted in 1939. that is the reflex of the vineyards planted after the phylloxera, because the people were moving from the top of the hills to the bottom of the hills, from Grenache to Carignan when the phylloxera came. And they replant with American rootstock the Carignan on the bottom of the hills, and we recuperate that very ancient Carignan, and this is Camille Pissarolles. And this is the most rustic and tragic wine that I never made. And for me, is my homage to the people that keeps alive that old vineyards during two world wars and the most tragic moment in Catalonia or right. Spain. So for me, they are part of my ancestral people, and it's a part of our vineyard history in Priorat. Absolutely.
Now, in the Cami, is it Grenache and Carignan?
Well, it's very old Carignan with Grenache. There are some times that this 600 kilos from 1 hectare of Carignan, sometimes it's 300, and then we have a little bit more Grenache than Carignan.
Right, it varies. But
always, the Carignan is more present than the Grenache in tasting. It's always there.
Now, are you starting to make more white, or you're making about the same, or maybe even less? Where are you with your whites? You know, you talked about Pique Paul and the Pedro Jimenez, the Garnacha Blanco.
Yeah, I have started planting in 2002 the white grapevines, because our region was very famous for distillate and sweet wines. But when our parents came, they demonstrate, they make the red wine revolution. But we are in the south, so our trying to make little bottles, few bottles of white wines was like, wow, we are into the south. We can do great white wines. So I think that since 2000, we have started a silent white wine revolution. That now is impressionant. I have planted in 2002, trying to recuperate white Pique Paul, then the white Grenache that we had, and Pedro Ximénez, three of our traditional white grapevines. And I'm absolutely in love with them. Here, traditionally, we make the fermentation with the skin, like an orange. We call it
brisade. So it's like an orange wine, right?
Yeah. We call brisade, is our traditional way of working the white wine. And I did that since 2008. But it's curious, I love the brisade wines, the orange wines. So I made the orange wine from Camille Pissarolles that I call Pissarolles Brisade. And I made it since 2008. But I put my first vintage on the market last year with 2016.
That's the first, wow.
I have 8 vintages in my cellar. Jazz.
Let's go, scared. Come on.
I was scared about the world saying, God, people will say that I'm crazy. So I kept 8 vintages.
They can say
in
that
cellar.
Anyway, but screw them. You're not crazy. Well, that's exciting. So, you know, to when you think of Mas Martinet, think of, you know, white wines in the future too. Mm-hmm. Before I wanna do the wine list with you, and I wanna sip a little of the Close Martinet with you. I wanted to ask you, as tireless as you seem, it seems like you find time to even do other things. You have your own project called Beyond Mas Martinet, called Venus La Universal.
Yeah.
I think what's nice about it is it's with your husband, Rene Barbier. Hmm. It looks to me like it's very sensual expressions of Grenache and Carignan, which is maybe something you want to do, you know, other than Mas Martinet. Yes. Tell me quickly about, you know, Venus La Universal.
Well, I took the rights of Mas Martinet in 1996, and I used to share a table and wines and gastronomy and time with my colleagues here in Priorat and Tarragona and around with wines. And I discovered 3 years after 1996, in 1999, that the most of the bottles that we put on blind tasting or on the table, they had the burgundy shape.
Right.
We have been drinking during a lot of years and a different style from the wines that we used to make. Because in Priorat, we had that idea during the 90s that more is more. And more ripening, more alcohol, more structure, right, more wood, more. And I was arriving 1999, and I had the sensation to arrive to at the end of the way. There is no way. I cannot ripe more. I cannot extract more. I need to make a change. So I was living in Falset, that is actually a Monsanto appellation, and it's outside Priorat appellation. So I used to work at Mass Martinet, so very dark, gray, dusty, and stony, and hideous, and dark place. And then I took my car just 5 kilometers. I go up to Falset, that is a granitic soil with quartz, with a lot of luminosity, a lot of freshness. And when I had the sensation every day that I was coming from the dark to the light, to the brightness. And then one day I said, oh my God, I need to make wine here in Falset. There is no nice appellation called Tarragona. My God, nobody knows. But right, if I'm searching for something bright, for something tense, for something special, it's here. So I start in 1999 to find some Carignan and some Syrah in that moment to make a special granite wine, more tense, more beauty, more different. And in that searching of beauty, I went to Galleria Uffizio in Florencia, and I saw the birth of Venus, and I fell in love. And I said, oh my God, this is the name for my wine. This is the beauty that I'm searching for. And I have the wine, I have no name, but now I have the name. So that was a little bit the idea, to make something completely opposite to our Mediterranean hidden and structure, right, Priorat, you know?
It's great that you're able to do that, you know, keeps your creative juices flowing, you know, instead of doing the same thing. And how does René help?
And then in that moment, René was starting in another Monsanto project with René's father. But then we start together, and in 2004, I said, oh my God, I have a partner here in Monsanto. Maybe you must be my partner. So,
perfect.
Well, we make a change. I said to my partner, oh my God, you are my friend, but I need to put René here, so get out of here. And now we are living in Venus, and it's both of us. That's it.
You just said you're living there?
Yes. Nice. We are living in Venus. Yeah.
Nice. So that sounds like a terrific project, and it sounds like an opportunity to taste two different, you know, of your styles.
And it's nice because in Priorat is well known, and we have just one style that it's very important to communicate that and the personality. But in Monsanto, we have 5 different styles, different exposure and different climates, and we can play a lot. And we are doing the wines with an absolute freedom that it's for us something for growing up.
Sounds great. All right, Sarah, I want you to quickly answer my wine list. We ask all our guests the same 5 questions.
Okay.
You won't have to try. It'll be great. Our listeners love to hear what people like you are drinking. So the first question is, what are you drinking now? What's in your fridge? What are you tasting, experimenting with the seasons changing? Do you switch wines? What are the few wines, you know, other than tasting your own stuff you're drinking? What do you like?
this is very difficult.
It's not difficult.
Yes, because I have a lot of them. One of the...
Give me the top two.
With Renee, we share our passion for discover everything. And we are very focused on absolutely natural wines and absolutely in a plenty of areas around the world. But one of our favorites is Jerez. So we love.
Wait, who?
Jerez. Sherry.
Oh, okay. Jerez. Right.
Yeah, for me, it's like Sherry. Sorry.
Have you? No, no, no. It's okay. I wanted to make sure. So, you know, because I post this on our social media. Okay. Now, is this something that recently you've gotten into? It's something you've always admired?
I have been before, but through the orange wine that I make, I love also the Veloflor, the yeast on the top.
Yes.
From Sherry. And we are working on that way from two of our new wines in here in Priorat and in Montsant.
You're taking the lead from them.
Yeah, and that's more than crazy. I think that it's like opening
those
your
are your
mind.
Innovations. Yeah. Go ahead.
And I think that it's nice because sometimes we simplify everything and we think about red wine in wood, white wine, direct press and very flower or fruit. And that's it. And I think that the most important thing is open your mind, because when we are very tolerant in wine, we can do it in gastronomy and then with people and then with society and education and everything. And I think that the wine
so
can
good,
be important.
Good segue. Tell me your favorite wine and food pairing. It may not be something you eat, you know, often, but in your mind, what just...
Look, one of our traditional dishes here in Priorat is lamb.
Okay.
And lamb with dry fruits and in the oven and with a little bit sauce and during 8 hours cooking, something like that.
So you have to match a wine to that sauce and the gaminess of the lamb. What's good?
And normally we think that with the lamb we put the red wine, but for me one of the most beautiful nights was opening a white Priorat called Neline from René, from Clos Mogador, and combine it with lamb, because the lamb is so fat, and with a white wine it's like cleaning your mouth, you know?
Right, it's like a palate cleanser.
For me it's one of the best pairings ever.
That's how you answer that question. That's a very interesting and well thought out pairing. All right, next question. Hopefully you can answer. And I know because of the pandemic you haven't been out and about much, but think before that. Do you have a favorite wine restaurant and or bar? Is there anything around you or through your travels where the wine list is terrific, the people that serve it are great, they're knowledgeable, the selection is good?
Absolutely.
Is there anything?
Can Roca. El Celler de Can Roca.
Well, that's one of the most famous.
I know that we have very close.
No, that's a great answer.
But really, this is the best.
It really is the best. So we're going to leave it at that. All right. Fourth question. This question is, what is your favorite all-time wine? Now, I have to back up. When I originally started asking the question, I wanted people to tell me the rarest, most expensive wine they ever drank. I don't care about that anymore. I care about that wine that, you know, throughout your wine life that was important to you, that, you know, awoke you, that, you know, just was meaningful to you. What's that wine, that important wine to you, or more than one?
One of the wines that have shocked me was the white from Vigna Tondonia.
Uh-huh.
1970.
Okay.
In that moment, I have understood that probably my idea that the red wines were the best for aging was not correct.
They taught you a lesson.
So I think that this is a degree, an upgrade. white wines can be aged probably more than red.
I agree, and I agree. They do it as well as anyone. All right, last question. The last question, and sometimes it's harder for winemakers to answer this than sommeliers or even restaurant people. But what do you think the best value wines are? If you had to pick, like my kids are in their mid-late 20s and they don't want to buy crappy wine, you know, for a small amount of money, but they can't afford, you know, to buy. So where do you think there are good value in red and white? Could be Spain, could be your wines, it could be anywhere in the world. What comes to your mind?
I think that in natural wines, you can have one of the most great values, actually.
I agree.
And
Loire, Petnat.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that they are probably not the wines that I adore more because I'm searching always for a lot of complexity. But approaching that, because I can see my child and my children, the elders are 18 and 17. And they have been winemaking with my parents during 5 years, natural wines, and they adore natural wines. They can pay with their friends our Didos in Monsanto, and then the rest of the natural wines around, or France or Italy, but absolutely here in Catalonia. And for me, the great revolution in natural wines is we need more complexity and paying more for them. But now, the more approachable with complexity and fantastic approach wines for me are the natural.
I love that answer, and I agree with you. I agree on two things. I agree there are some terrific values there.
And I think that if the young people can approach to the wine through the natural approach, I think we can change the world.
I agree. And I agree that, you know, down the road, there has to be, you know, some attention towards making more complex wines and all that. All right. So the last thing I want to do, because we're almost done, is I want to taste for our weekly wine sip. I want to taste the Clos Martinet. It's the 2017. Would you say this is a flagship wine? I mean, this is an important wine, yes, to the winery. Okay. So tell me a little about it. The vintage, we talked about the Martinet Brew. This is the big brother in a way. Tell me about the blend and the vintage and everything.
Well, Clos Martinet is our flagship because it's our first wine from the single vineyard, and it's the name of our place. So we have started with that wine, and it's my house wine.
Right.
And 2017 is a very hard vintage. In that vintage, I have learned two important things. I forget my selection grape table, and I said, no, I don't need it anymore. And I used to make pied de cuba, so I don't use industrial yeasts. I used to go to the vineyard, I took some grapes, I crushed with my feet, I put in a barrel, and I wait for 1 week more or less, fermenting inside, reproducing the yeasts, and then I put in the tank. In 2017, I had no time. So I make a spontaneous everything. So really? I took the grapes, I put in the tank, and that's it. And I was very scared, and it was going fantastic.
Like it.
Yeah. So, 2000. I prefer the fresh vintages, like 2018 or 19 or 20. But 17 for me is the last very hot vintage that I managed as I could, and I think that just doing a spontaneous saved me. So I was very scared, but 2017 showed me that everything is possible, and I'm tasting the wine and drinking the wine, and there is born from the hiddenness, from the war, a warm vintage, but there is right. a complexity that I adore, absolutely.
Mm, very much so. On the nose, on the palate. Mm. Tell me, what are great foods to pair with this particular wine?
Wow. I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
With a hamburger.
Well, why not?
Pizza, which is not, Spanish.
And everything. I think that when you have a very nice bottle of wine that is taking your attention, you don't put a lot of attention to the what you are eating. For me, pairings are difficult. I'm choosing a bottle of wine, and then we are doing something that can be okay. I'm not cooking asparagus with it, okay?
Right.
So right. I can put some meat or with a little bit sauce or not. I can right. put some fish also because it's not so tannic. So it can be cut or something like that. That it's enough fat, to balance with the tannins. So
there's good versatility based on the type of wine it is for. It'll do well with a lot of foods. All right, Sarah, I told you things would go quickly. We have to wrap up. I want to get some information from you. But before we do that, let me just do a little closing. If you have a question, suggestion, wine happening or event, hit me up at sam@thegrapenation.com. That's sam@thegrapenation.com. Subscribe to the Grape Nation podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, or wherever you get your pods. Don't be lazy. Just hit that subscribe button and every show, will come up. Follow us on Facebook at The Grape Nation, on Instagram, we're at SBenRuby, on Twitter, we're at BenRuby, but you can always use the hashtag The Grape Nation on both. We're trying to build a little community on Clubhouse, so follow us at BenRuby. As I mentioned, I will post Sarah's wine list with some interesting recommendations. I will post the wines that we drank, the vintages and, the specific names. On our social media sites. Sarah, if we want to find you, Mas Martinet, Venus, on social media or on the internet, where are the best places to go?
I don't know, everywhere. You can here and then social media, yes. In Instagram, absolutely. And
I think it's Mas Martinet, right?
Mas Martinet, yeah. And then right. Venus Universal also in Instagram. I think that there we are very connected. And from here, and then, the webpage.
Right, I was just going to say, if you Google any of the, if you Google Close Martinet, Mas Martinet, you'll
we are there.
There's a beautiful website, with a lot of information. All right, Sarah, I want to thank you for taking time, probably walking back from the fields into a room to talk to me. So I appreciate that. Thank you to our guest, Sarah Perez. Thank you to our engineer, Matt, and everyone at the Heritage Radio Network. I'm Sam BenRuby, and you've been listening to The Grape Nation. The Grape Nation is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Instagram and Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can also find us at facebook.com/heritageradionetwork. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be part of the food world's most innovative community? Subscribe to the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join the HRN family by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. And thanks for listening.